You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. Celebrate Canada's 150th and treat yourself to a brand new Silverado. 20% off MSRP cash credit on select vehicles right now at Lakewood Chev.
A guy, I don't know if he made any one-handed catches. I don't know if he even played football back in his name. We're joined by Blake McDonald from World Health. Blake, welcome back to the show. Did he ever play football, and did he ever make any one-handed catches?
I have not, but you should see me on the my son and I do this thing on our trampoline where he keeps calling it the Odell. It's like the fallback catch. It's pretty amazing.
Is he throwing them to you? Let's get serious. You're probably throwing to him, right?
Yeah, it's more me throwing to him, I got to be honest with you.
Well, Blake, let's get right into it. A couple weeks ago, you talked on the show about how some findings found that Edmonton is one of the most unhealthy cities in Canada. It's a little disturbing, to be perfectly honest. So this week, I thought we could talk a little bit more about what our listeners can do to make sure they aren't the only ones, or they aren't the ones falling into the category.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And you know, if you recall a few weeks back, we discussed, you know, some of the statistical headwinds that are, you know, kind of causing Edmontonians to live these less healthy lifestyles. And it's things like cold weather that prevents outdoor activities, the downturn in the economy, which has created stress and reduced the available income to dedicate to living healthier. And then Edmonton is uncharacteristically skewed towards, you know, males. And, you know, males drink more, they smoke more. You know, they give less of a hoot about their health and well-being. And so, you know, to reiterate what I said last week, I think awareness is our biggest challenge. And when I say that, I think about that third headwind, the predominantly male population who are typically either misinformed or in some cases even oblivious to what a healthy lifestyle even is. And I have to be careful because I know that there's a ton of sports fans who listen to this show probably who find themselves in that category.
Okay, hold on. Are you telling me that not all of our listeners are pillars of healthy lifestyles?
Oh, I'm sure they all are. but seriously, I am not taking a shot on it, at anyone. But I think, you know, there's a ton of people listening right now who think they live an active lifestyle. And they think that it's active enough to be able to look and feel the way that they want. But in actuality, you know, they're actually a high risk of obesity or, you know, they're getting surprised because they go to their doctor and they find out, you know, that they're pre-diabetic or, you know, they may have a high risk of stroke or heart disease. So I think there's a lot of people would be surprised based on their current activity levels where they currently are.
We're joined by Blake McDonald from World Health. Blake, what would you say to the group of guys that's going to make any type of difference to them?
Well, you know, remember, guys, I talked about awareness. One of the big things that guys need to understand is that everyday activity is probably not going to be enough. And lots of guys think that every day, and, you know, they walking their dog every day or weekend bike rides are kind of enough to maintain the way they look and the way that they want to feel. And while, you know, those are important types of things, they're important activities for our overall calorie expenditure, we also often overestimate how active we are, since much of our day involves sitting. So most people drive to and from work, they sit at a computer working, they catch up on social media, you know, during their breaks, they finish their day by watching TV. And most guys also live in a lifestyle of convenience. That includes, you know, we eat lunch at drive-through restaurants, we use bank machines and pharmacies, and we even find ourselves, you know, driving around looking for the closest parking spot. But here's the thing to know. We know that while everyday activity is great, our bodies simply need more to stave off, you know, high occurrences of chronic diseases and conditions.
All right. So, like, what does that really mean now? Like, for the average person listening right now, what do they need to do differently?
Well, you know, to understand the context of where your everyday activity sits in the spectrum of energy burn, let me kind of introduce four quick concepts. The first is called NEAT, and it stands for non-exercise activity thermogenesis. It's the energy expended for every day for everything that is not sleeping, eating, or sports-like exercise. And it ranges from the energy expended, you know, walking to work, typing, performing yard work, and even fidgeting. And it plays a role in our overall expenditure, our calorie expenditure, but it won't necessarily have enough of an impact to see any positive changes to your body or stave off any of these chronic diseases, because over time, our body actually adapts to our current level of movement. So we kind of move to these next three stages. And the second state we call high intensity exercise. And so it can be considered to be anything that's above the normal everyday level of exertion. Essentially, it feels like you're out of breath, you're body starts to fatigue, your heart is pumping at a rate higher than normal. And during this type of exercise, you burn calories at a rate 2 to 4 times faster than that sort of first stage. And in addition, accelerating your heart rate and breathing has numerous other, you know, health benefits that everybody knows about, like strengthening organs and like your heart and your lungs, increasing your blood flow and releasing, you know, all the essential hormones that help drive normal bodily functions. And it's recommended that people should endeavor to achieve a minimum of 15 minutes of this type of activity, probably 3 to 4 times per week. So, you know, in addition to everything you're doing now, you got to add that in. There's a couple of other stages that people should be aware of. One is called, you know, we refer to it as EPOC. So everyone's heard before that your body is more effective at burning calories after an exercise session. But this afterburn effect is like kind of like how your car engine remains warm after being turned off. So once a workout is over and you're back in your daily routine, your body's metabolism can continue to burn calories at a higher rate at rest. And this is called excess post-exercise oxygen consumption, or when I said EPOC, that's what it stands for. And that's the amount of oxygen required to restore your body back to its normal resting level of metabolic function. And so if you're able to obtain a heart rate of 85% of max for more than 12 minutes during an activity, you'll throw your body into this state, and it will burn fat calories at a 30% higher rate for 24 to 36 hours after the workout. And, you know, if you can achieve this 2 or 3 times a week, it goes a long ways in making significant gains towards looking and feeling better. And then the final thing I just wanted to mention is just, you know, there's a sort of fourth stage, which isn't as much a state of energy burn as it is something that allows you to burn more calories at rest. And it's called progressive overload. And it acts to sort of increase your lean body mass. And this involves any type of lifting, pushing, pulling exercises that overload your muscles. Lean body mass, by the way, is defined as the amount of weight you carry on your body that isn't fat. So in other words, muscle. But when we overload our muscles, we force our body to add more of it. Muscle's a funny thing. The more of it you have, the more calories that are required to maintain it. And what that means is essentially that the more muscle you can carry on your body, the more calories you burn at rest. So for this reason, you know, including resistance training 3 to 5 times a week is sort of necessary to maintain that higher metabolic rate at rest. So, you know, rather than just thinking about all the things that you're currently doing, you kind of have to get into these three other stages: this high intensity exercise, generate, you know, EPOC within your body, and really look to overload your muscles so you're creating more muscle.
Blake, we'll close on this. We have a text question in from Jared. He just says, I work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, where for 6 hours each day, I'm moving a total of 1,000 cases, weighing a total of 7 tons, with a light sweat all day. How many calories should someone like me intake as a 24-year-old? That one coming in from Jared.
You know, that's hard. It's hard for me to actually answer that question. My guess would be that, you know, if you're moving a bunch of boxes for 8 hours a day, you know, you're probably burning 3,000-4,000 calories and maybe somewhere in that range per day. And so, you know, somebody like that, if you're only eating 2,000 to 3,000 calories, you're probably in that calorie deficit and you're able to sort of get that, get the results or look and feel the way that you want. The key thing with that though, is you got to understand, you know, how much time are you actually sitting around? Are you always lifting? Is there, you know, repetition, or is it just, you know, 5 or 10 minutes of hard work and then you sit around for 50 minutes doing paperwork? So that's the key thing to, you know, and people don't realize how much sitting we actually do. So making the conscious effort to make sure that you're also, you know, doing some high intensity exercise. But also, you know, it sounds like this guy would be getting a lot of progressive overload by lifting all those boxes. But you know, getting that heart rate up would be something that he also has to continue to focus on.
Blake, thanks for taking a few minutes with us. We'll chat with you in a couple weeks, okay?
Sounds good, guys. Thanks.
Blake McDonald from World Health.